Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Anne Baldwin.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080 from our studios here at Baldwin Media. This is Anne Baldwin, and you know, we all know the world has changed, so my co-host is working very safely from home. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. How are you?
Hanging in there. You know, it's an interesting time, isn't it?
I hope I never see this again in my lifetime, in our lifetime. It's really scary.
It really is. And, you know, as the president and CEO of a very large nonprofit agency that serves so many different kinds of clients, this has to be especially difficult, you know, not only for your employees, but for your clients as well.
Yes, it's, you know, my staff are, you know, the unsung heroes, working in 24-hour residential programs and providing outpatient services also. They're showing up at work, and we're using all the precautions we need to.
You know, I think for me, the hardest part of all of this is the mental struggle, right? Trying to keep that positive attitude and just trying to, you know, remain confident that this is going to come to a conclusion and a resolution. You know, when I think about Nico, your son, it's his senior year of high school. What that must be like, but you were just talking to him before we started the program, and he was heading out by himself, and I said, where is he going? And you said, he's going fishing.
And today they don't have any school, although, you know, he goes to Immaculate High School, and they've been wonderful, and he's been on the e-learning, so they're all set up, et cetera. But, you know, for other, you know, high schools, they may not be as lucky, but they're trying to set that up. But he keeps saying to me, I'm not going to have a graduation. I'm not going to have a prom. I'm not. And just trying to keep it positive because, you know, we will get through this. And I'm hoping that at some point the school, all the schools around in Connecticut will, you know, do something, even if it's a later date for our seniors.
I don't think even I understood, you know, the severity of this issue until it continues to unfold. You know, I was away in Texas putting the final touches on my daughter's wedding, which was supposed to be April 11th, and so I wasn't really paying attention to the news like I usually do, and it's really bad. And you know, I told her they had one date left the end of August. I said, you guys should grab that. You know, it really is impacting, you know, not only the financial and the health and the well-being, but, you know, life events.
We will get through it, but it won't be easy. But it's just the fear of getting sick and possible ending up in the hospital.
You know, my heart breaks for you because I know your mother's so far away in Florida and you've got that distance between you. My dad, thankfully, you know, 85 and not doing well, is up the street. But that's the other consideration, is so many people that are out there. You know, I'm grateful that at least I'm here to be with him. And, you know, I know you have people down in Florida that are watching after your mother, but it's not the same as knowing that you can go and see them and make sure yourself that everything's okay. And you try not to whine and complain about everything, but it's hard, isn't it?
You know, if you're a social person and, you know, you like to see people and interact and, you know, go to the dry cleaner, go to meet a friend for coffee, you know, all these kind of things that you start kind of take for granted.
You know, you can't even have a church service for someone now. You can't even go to the funeral home and have families mourn the loss of a loved one right now. I mean, every aspect of life from birth. I mean, I'm in a building here in New Britain where we've got an OBGYN upstairs, and I see these women who, you know, have to be ready to go.
That's,
and I,
so,
and my heart breaks. It's like, how is that going to work out? You know, it's just, it's so sad from that stage of life all the way to the end of life and everything in between. I can't imagine.
Well, yeah, I have seen, I mean, I know some women that are pregnant and they're, you know, due soon, and they're, you know, they already have been told that they're going to have to be going on by themselves. They're not going to be able to have their, you know, husband or significant other or whoever was going to be in there with them. And, you know, I know a couple of two women that are really upset about that. And
if there's any humor that I've kind of found in the situation, you know, you've heard, Lisa, about how a lot of supermarkets and Costco and Sam's Club have opened up their stores early for people over 60, right?
Yeah.
We're not there yet.
I know. We're not there yet.
Almost there, but we're not there yet. And it's funny because I don't know how things are going in other communities, but, you know, part of our neighborhood Facebook group, they've had all these stories and pictures of all these seniors, you know, just lining up outside the door and fighting with each other and yelling at the people at the store that they don't have what they said they would have. And, you know, they're just being very, very ornery. And it kind of surprises me because I would think that that generation has kind of been through some of this stuff before, right? And that they would be a little more sensitive to what's happening. But I guess they're not.
I know. Exactly.
I guess they're not. Well, you know, the other thing, it was good chatting and catching up with you, Lisa, but we also have a guest for the second half of our show.
Yes, we do.
And he's one of our favorite guys, right?
Yes, he is.
He's Daryl McGraw. Welcome.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're hanging in there. Daryl's got a very interesting job. He's a senior reentry analyst with the Institute for Municipal and Regional Planning at Central Connecticut State University. He's also just, he's an author. He's all over Facebook. I got to tell you first, before Lisa and I start chatting with you, Daryl, I loved the photograph that you put on Facebook the other day where you said, the view, and you had, it was like from a jail cell, you know, with all the barbed wire of somebody in a corrections facility. What a powerful black and white photo that is.
Well, yeah, that was it reminded me of the view that I had for, like, it spent 10 years of my life in and out of the Department of Corrections. So looking out of your window, or looking out of my window, a lot of times all I saw was razor wire, so that picture reminded me of that was my view for 10 years.
Oh, my friend. You're just so inspirational.
Well, I really just want people to really think about the individuals that are incarcerated, you know, where during this hard time, being incarcerated during this time is probably pretty scary for many people that are locked behind bars because they just don't know. I mean, they get a little bit of the news, but, you know, a lot of times the system, a lot of times what happens is they go into either a complete lockdown where everything is, there's no movement, or a modified lockdown where, you know, you can move from here to there, but you really, there's no visits, there's no outside visits, there's nothing like that. And I remember that, and happened to, and I'm a volunteer now. And volunteers, you know, for the safety of everyone, we're not allowed to go inside either. So they're getting very limited information from the outside world. Especially if they don't have loved ones or someone to call or write or what have you. And if they're on lockdown, then they can't use the phones and so on and so forth. So,
you know,
yeah,
though, Daryl,
I
would think, though, that, you know, the population is probably, I hate to say it, but in a safe place, right? So if or we're not, because some are coming in and some are going out. And I know because of your position, Daryl, that you keep in contact with a lot of inmates and you do a lot of volunteer work there. So you don't think that right now they're in a safe place at all?
Well, I think it's funny. It's safe, but until it's not, right? The fact that when I was inside, and if someone got the flu, or the flu started going around the jail, it went pretty rampant and everybody got the flu. It wasn't a matter of if, it was more so like everyone's saying now, when you got it, because of the way the ventilation systems are set up and, you know, the close contact. So, yeah, everyone's fine right now, but if someone were to get sick and COVID-19 were to get inside the prison, it would just be a matter of time how many people actually got infected with the virus, you know, because of the close contact.
Yep.
And a lot of times, like even with the flu now, if your cellie gets it, they quarantine people and then they end up having to, like, if I get it, my cellie's got it, and we're sometimes whole blocks are, like, you know, on quarantine, or people like are in their cells and stuck in their cells, and it's already bad enough to, you know, have to be in your cell for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us are telling us to, like, kind of quarantine in our house, but imagine quarantine in a cell, you know, I remember being incarcerated and there was a stomach virus, and we were all on lockdown because we weren't sure. We weren't sure if it was food poisoning or if it was a stomach virus. But imagine being trapped in a cell where you and your cellie basically are, you know, I don't want to be too graphic, but, you know, using the bathroom right back to back. Like, there's no, it was pretty bad. And, you know, we were fed in ourselves, and it was a pretty bad time. And we couldn't, you know, at the time we couldn't call out because, you know, we were just pretty much confined to ourselves. And that's kind of what happens when, like, a national emergency or something happens. Everything gets locked down. So if, like, God forbid, a CO or something, we've just seen recently that, you know, a couple of COs, a couple of marshals have been have found out that they've been testing positive. And really the true way, which is why the DOC has, like, stopped visitors and so on and stuff coming in, is because that's really the only way those individuals who have been doing 10 or 20 years could ever get infected, because they don't have contact to the outside world. But if someone brings it in and it starts to circulate around in jail, oh man, that's going to be a problem.
So if you're just tuning in, we're with Daryl McGraw, who works very hard at reentry. You did what, 10 years, Daryl, for what was your crime?
Yeah, so I did 10 years on the installment plan, and I was in and out, which means I was in and out of prison numerous times. Everything, most of my charges were all direct. They were various charges, but all related to substance use. And, so the last time I was incarcerated, I was on violation of probation, but all stemming from my drug addiction.
But you got it together, and you're clean and sober, and now you're giving back. So Lisa and I also wanted to talk to you about, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, not only in Connecticut, but other states, about letting some inmates out, you know, to kind of, you know, not maybe kind of separate folks a little bit more. What's your thought on that?
Well, yeah, there are a group of inmates that, so New York and New Jersey, a couple of states have been, quite a few states have been letting people go, right? Number one, the people that they're talking about letting go are, like, people that are incarcerated on low-level bonds. These are individuals that have not been convicted of a crime yet, right? Mm-hmm. So these are individuals who may be waiting court, they're on bonds, but because of their financial situation, they can't afford to get out. You know, we're talking about people that, you know, reach pieces, or not even necessarily reach peace. Someone that is there for a $500 bond, $1,000 bond, low level, probably drug related, because the majority of people that are there are for low level nonviolent drug crimes that could be released back to their homes. And one of the things that I emphasize the most on is the fact that I know there are a lot of advocates that I know are advocating for mass release of individuals, but I would have to say for me that I would never advocate for someone being released who doesn't have a place to go. So, yes, some of those individuals that, like in New York, when they looked at it, or New Jersey, when they looked at releasing a bunch of people, they're talking about individuals that just left the street that may have still have connections with their families. They didn't burn any bridges. They can go back to a place. But we need to be really looking at individuals that have a place to go, because I can't even think of anything more fearful than to be released homeless with COVID-19 going on.
Oh, obvious.
And,
yeah.
Oh, my God. And no stores. Shelters are at capacity. That would be a very bad situation for someone who had no place to go. So we need to really identify making sure individuals that do have a place to go. And those individuals that are at the end of their sentence that are identified as homeless, those are the ones that we really should be looking at as priority one, and looking at making sure that they transition to a safe place as well, whether that be shelter or we find some type of transitional housing, until we can get a handle on our health epidemic that we have going on right now.
Daryl, did you see the latest article today about, I know that, you know, you talked about, you know, releasing, the thought of releasing folks out of our prison system who were low at risk, or, you know, who had a safe place to go, et cetera. What are you hearing? Anything else are you hearing with the inside scoop with inmates, or, you know, are you in touch with anyone? And sort of, you know, how are some of the guys doing that you work with? Do you know?
So I do. I haven't had any contact with anybody that on the inside, but I've had numerous calls, emails, texts, and messages from family members. And there are people that are eligible. There's a DUI, some people who have DUI charges that are, they were driving under the influence, that are, you know, right, within range to be released.
Yeah.
Right at this point in time, they're not sick, so they're just waiting for some of these individuals, according to their family members, they're waiting just for, it's like paperwork. It's just processing of paperwork. And if people aren't at work, so therefore it kind of drags the, like, you know, and I know that, you know, I have had numerous conversations with people from DOC, and I know that they're working, they're doing their best to release as many people as they can that are eligible. I think that there's a lot of mixed messages out there in the community, and I know that the public gets a little nervous when they hear the talk of releasing inmates. But we're not talking about releasing someone that, you know, anyone that's violent or that has recently, you know. Right. We're talking about individuals that, number one, probably have not even been, number one, haven't been convicted of a crime, or have are within weeks of being released anyway because they have served their time. And they have a place to go. So, we just want to be clear about that, you know, there's a lot of people. So the families of individuals who are, like, doing 30 days or 60 days from release, they really would love to see their loved ones home, you know,
right,
especially while they're healthy. But we also advocate that, you know, if there could be, we have had some conversations. I've been on some phone calls with Yale University and some of the medical students that could do some, you know, making sure that that they're healthy being transitioned, or if they have any health issues, that we make sure we connect them to the right to the right people.
Well, you know, the other thing is, Daryl, I've been on both sides of this. My father was a longtime CO, corrections officer,
right.
So you know, I lived that and heard the stories, and frankly didn't have a whole lot of compassion for people who are incarcerated, because, you know, I had my own perceptions from another vantage point, until a friend of mine became incarcerated, and I went to visit him on a couple of occasions, and I had a whole new understanding of isolation and, you know, just the barbed wire and the going through the metal detectors and getting, frisks on your way in just to sit across a table from somebody. So I have a whole new, but, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and understandably, that, you know, don't have a lot of compassion for people who've been convicted of crimes. You said, well, maybe they haven't gone to court yet, so they haven't been convicted, but they're where they're at for a reason. But you're talking about not hardcore criminals getting out. What advantage does that give, other than the obvious, and that they won't be as cramped into the space?
Well, the advantage that it gives DOC an opportunity to free up some space if they do have to quarantine individuals like that are not eligible for release. So they're going to need bed space to be able to, individuals that are not eligible for release, they're going to need space for those individuals, and then the individuals that can go home can go home and connect with their families and be there, and they're not at risk. So you hear a lot of advocates saying that people would be at risk. They're the most vulnerable population. Because, like I said, once something like that were to transpire in the system, like if something were to start going around, it runs rapid within the system. So therefore, there would be that that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be actually at risk of exposing somebody who's going home in 30 days, when we can, if that person's fine, we can let that person go now, and so on and so forth, and we don't have to risk that person getting infected inside, and then
taking
no matter what,
right,
in 30 days, that person has to be released, because DOC can't keep him any longer, because he served his time.
Right.
So why not? There's a win-win in releasing individuals that are eligible.
Lisa, you know,
for release.
Lisa, the Connection works closely. You have a reentry program within the Connection. Does this at all impact you? And have you all thought about what if they do start releasing these inmates? What is that going to mean for your services?
Well, right now we're filled to capacity, and you know we're serving folks that are on work release, and you know unfortunately a lot of those guys are not working now because they worked in you know restaurant or you know other businesses where you know some restaurants have closed, etc. But we'll be there. You know, we're still providing services. Nothing has stopped at this point. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. I don't anticipate there won't be services. You know, we're not shutting down, obviously, because there's a need. We're not going to be releasing folks in our programs right now. We're maintaining our services. So I think we'll just have to see. We're not there yet.
Right. There's just so many unknowns. Well, Daryl, we've got just about 45 seconds left of this conversation, which has been great. What's the message you want to leave for our listeners? What would you like folks to think about when it comes to those that are incarcerated during this coronavirus disaster?
Well, I think that I would say that, you know, similar to what you were saying, like, you know, there's a misconception about individuals that are incarcerated. Yep, definitely some people have made some mistakes. I myself have made some very poor choices and found myself incarcerated. But one of the things that we can't lose sight on is the fact that each and every one of those people are human beings, and they deserve to be treated as such with dignity and respect. And the fact that you make a mistake, and you find yourself incarcerated, that makes you no less human than anybody else. So I just really would like for us to keep the thoughts on those individuals, that they are not just inmates, they're mothers, brothers, sons, sisters, and husbands, and community members, and we should always think of them like that and nothing less.
You know,
thank you for that.
That is wonderful. And, you know, there's always, oftentimes, there's underlying issues like substance abuse. No excuse, but
mental health and other issues, trauma.
Yeah.
So trauma, everything. There's a ton of reasons how people end up. And then there's people that end up getting arrested, and the police are not always right, and end up, individuals have, that's why we have trials, and that's why we have court. So there's people in there now that are incarcerated that are not necessarily have done anything. They just don't have the means to get out and properly fight their case from the outside due to their financial situation.
Right. Well, Daryl McGraw, you know, keep up the good work. I know that you're always there. I love, if folks get a chance, like him on Facebook, follow him on social media, because he is a really great advocate and a motivational speaker, too. I mean, I just love the things that you share, the inspiration. You don't have to be an inmate or former inmate to like what Daryl McGraw says.
No,
Karen. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Karen, thank you, Daryl, for all the great work that you do and for your friendship and the work that you're doing for everyone in the community. And we always love having you on the show, and we're looking forward to having you on again soon. Take care of yourself. Practice social distancing.
I'm practicing right now. Thank you so much, you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty.
And bye-bye. You know what time it is now, Lisa?
I do.
Time to say goodbye and thank our listeners for tuning in to this edition of The Connection right here on
WTIC News Talk 1080.
Way up high.